As we begin this Lent season, we might well do to admit that when it comes to sin and temptation, as a society, we have become extraordinarily sophisticated in putting on our own spin on sin and offering absolution all in one. The advertising industry positively encourages us to think of temptation and sin as something we should neither resist nor avoid. Rachel Turner, working for a well-known tea brand, said, "In an increasingly busy and pressure-laden world, it's important to indulge now and then. Whether it's a little bit of luxury, a little bit naughty, or something you wouldn't want anyone else to know about. After all, life would be boring if we didn't indulge occasionally." And Hello magazine claims to know exactly what those guilty pleasures are here in Britain. Among the top 50, I've just picked a few out, don't worry, I'm not going to tell you all of them, is eating a family-sized tub of ice cream all by yourself, you understand? Watching Netflix all day, stealing soaps and toiletries from hotels, having a whole pack of biscuits with a cup of tea, probably while nobody is looking, drinking juice or milk directly from the carton, or eating Nutella out of the jar. That's my confession. I have been known to do that, much to the horror of our son. We smile and nod. We have made giving into temptation socially acceptable, even desirable. After all, it's innocent and harmless, isn't it? So it follows that the story of Adam and Eve being told not to eat from that tree, or the account of Jesus who refuses to turn stones into bread, does not sit comfortably with us. Who wants a lecture about what not to do, only to be made to feel guilty? Or is that just what we have come to expect in church during Lent? Allow me to suggest that nothing could be further from Jesus' intent here. After all, the only reason we know about his temptation is because he told his disciples about it. He must have told them because he knew that they and we would face the same temptations, or, better translated, the same tests. Let's take Jesus' refusal to turn stones into bread. Stuck in a wilderness, and after a 40-day fast, this could be his last chance of survival. But he has decided not to take matters into his own hand. Instead, he chooses to rely on God's timing and provision. This, of course, is what God was trying to teach the people of Israel after the Exodus during their 40 years in the wilderness, both physically and metaphorically speaking, that they and we should learn to trust him to provide for our needs. And after all, the only way to learn how to trust is when we have come to the end of our own resources. But we are not good at waiting or trusting. And because we are busy meeting our own needs, we fail to take care of each other. It means that the economy and our well-being is more important than a fair distribution of resources or the well-being of planet Earth. But the idea of having less or of having to change is unpopular. We know what we want and deserve, and we know best. And there probably isn't anyone here who in some form or other hasn't been affected by the terrible effects of addiction, either in themselves, a family member, or a friend. A beloved person trying in vain to meet a need or escape personal pain through gambling, alcohol, sex, or substance abuse. They have become trapped in a destructive pattern of behavior. God understands our deepest hunger, not just physical hunger, but our hunger for love, for acceptance, for significance, for meaning, for life itself. And Jesus, at his moment of greatest need, both here in the wilderness and then, of course, later on the cross, knows that bread and all it stands for is not enough. We need God. We need spiritual bread. But much greater than our personal needs appear to be global needs right now. The consequences of climate change and the potential spread of the coronavirus hang like a cloud over us. And whatever the outcome, the economy and markets are already being affected. Confidence is sadly giving way to fear. Already we can see that the resulting fear alone could have a much wider knock-on effect than the actual virus itself. What should our response be? Jesus, throw yourself down from this temple, the angels will surely catch you. Or will they? Can you be sure that God will keep his promise? Let him prove himself. This is the second test, to see if we can trust God, not just for our needs, but also for protection. Not a protection which shields us from all harm, but a protection which gives us strength and courage when others give in to fear. And finally, whatever it is you want, the top spot is on offer. If you worship someone or something other than God. We didn't need Goethe or Faust to point out to us that this kind of bargain does not end well. We were not meant to be all powerful. Jesus refused power. He laid it down willingly. And in return, God gave him authority over everything. Now, both Matthew and Luke tell us about this temptation narrative. Both tell us that Jesus was led into the wilderness by the Spirit. But Luke adds that Jesus returned full of the power of the Spirit. And so the point I think they're making is that when those same tests come to us, as they do, they are not meant to harm us or to make us feel guilty. They are meant to strengthen our faith and our resolve to follow Christ and to trust him for all things. And when we fail, and we all do, we need not beat ourselves up or hide in shame, because there is real forgiveness available from the one who loves us and who was tested himself. Amen.